Michael Kelly filling in for Chris Ranji, and it's actually a perfect day for you to be my co-host because it is Labor Day weekend, and you are the first family of labor in the St. Louis area.
You and I belong to a union. We're both in SAG-AFTRA. I also happen to be in the United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 655 here in St. Louis. How about that?
Can I ask, like, what would prompt you to be, is that for your job?
Well, when I grew up, I worked at the grocery stores, and I just kept my membership with them throughout this entire time because I believe in the cause of fighting for workers' rights.
Excellent. Well,
and so we are going to talk a little Labor Day stuff. We're joined now by the president of the St. Louis Labor Council. His name is Pat Kellett. Pat, thanks for joining us on KMOX.
Well, good morning, Mike and Amy, and happy Labor Day weekend.
Happy Labor Day weekend to you. Now, full disclosure, my father used to be the president of the St. Louis Labor Council, and now you sit in that job. Remind people what the Labor Council is here in St. Louis.
Well, big shoes to fill with your father. He was a lion in our industry for darn sure. But so the Labor Council is a federation of unions and its members here in St. Louis, but we are associated with the national AFL-CIO, and there's some 15 million members at the national AFL-CIO and about 500 chapters. So we're one of those chapters here in St. Louis and about seven surrounding counties. We're nearly 100,000 members. And, you know, we work to, you know, mobilize and organize workers so they have a voice in the political process.
Well,
go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And so anytime you drive by a job, whether they're building at BJC or a local university or a new house, those are likely union members, and they may be carpenters, electricians, et cetera, and they all belong under your council. And under your council, you had a lot of stuff going on right now in the St. Louis area. In particular, Boeing, our region's largest employer right now, finds itself in the midst of a strike. Mr. Kellett, what's going on out there? What's the status, and what's your prognosis for the future?
Well, I did talk to President Boeing this morning, Mike, and the prognosis is good. I mean, let's first say how lucky we are to have Boeing in town, right? And I'll tell you, Mike, I've been out on the line, I don't know, a half a dozen times. I talked to those workers, and they feel the same way. They know how blessed we are to have Boeing here. And Boeing's doing well financially right now. I mean, you know, but it's time to share with the workers. I think the media, the national media, is kind of given a one-sided observation of what's going on there. I get to talk to the workers on a daily basis. It's time for Boeing to keep doing the good things they're doing, but also to share it with the workers on the line. They're a very educated workforce. You know, they're part of our national security, you know, safety in the commercial jets. And these men and women deserve a fair shake. And Mr. Boeing, our president, certainly wants to thank everybody's support. The public support's been wonderful. The union brothers and sisters have been wonderful for them. He feels good. They're going back to the table after the holiday, and hopefully we'll get these men and women back to work real shortly.
Well, that's good to hear, but the news there is that there's nothing's going to happen between now and the end of the week. It appears as though the strike could go on further into next week, so hopefully that will find its way out. Pat, we also saw a job action going on in downtown St. Louis with janitors. What's going on with the janitors in the city of St. Louis?
Yeah, well, I was fortunate enough to join that. It was a rally. It was, you know, let the general public and certainly Mr. Novelty know what we think of that. So there's some 16 janitors in the building, the Regents building in Clayton, and they make about $14 an hour with no benefits. You think about that workforce, you know, probably mostly taking public transportation and, you know, working in the middle of the night, and $14 an hour with no benefits. It's just no way to raise a family. It's, you know, so if we were lucky enough to have that building organized, you know, those union members make an average of $16 an hour with health care, with a pension, and a future. And that's why I was proud to be down there, you know, talking on behalf of those non-union workers. And hopefully we can talk to the owner, and get those men and women a better style of living.
Pat, you were talking about the negotiations with Boeing, and obviously you hear those of us on the outside from the negotiations between the unions and the various companies. And is it each negotiation is very different than another? Some might be more cordial, some might be more tense.
Oh, absolutely, yes. I have a building trades background, Amy, and we have a contractors association, all local contractors here in the St. Louis area. And yes, we have a very cordial attitude towards collectively bargaining for our members. You know, it's advantageous for both of us, the contractor side and certainly union members, working in the buildings that Mike mentioned earlier. It's business. Is it tense right now at Boeing? Yes, it is, but it's business. Let's pray that, as President Boeing said, that we get back to work here real soon and get those jets flying.
Pat, several months ago on the show, we had a Salute the Trades Week, just looking at all the different trades and the workers here in the St. Louis bi-state area, just how they keep our cities going. And I know that the trades need people. How is it with the unions maybe helping to recruit new workers into the trades? I know some high schools have some really cool programs now that are helping, whether it's construction or electrical or plumbing.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I had the privilege of going out to a workforce development. I serve on a workforce development board in St. Charles, and they have a workforce initiative, a junior college building they just put together, and all the trades are represented there. And the nice thing is they go to the high schools in advance and recruit the young men and women, as the unions do. Amy, we are always doing seminars and such to basically initiate what the building trades have to offer for the young men and women and their parents. So there's a lot of outreach going on. I will say this, we're fortunate in the building trades. We're a well-known commodity, and we have a lot of men and women applying for our apprenticeships, more than we can actually always take in. So it's a pretty good problem to have, but yes, you're right. As a whole, there is a need for building trades workers and manufacturing workers and such.
So here we are at Labor Day, Pat, and Labor Day is always kind of the end of the year. It's also a time to reflect on where workers stand. As I see it, workers, and in particular union members, seem to be the sexy object in this upcoming election. We see both Republicans and Democrats finally talking about workers' issues. Is that as unbelievable to you as it feels like to me?
Well, it is a good feeling. It is unbelievable. I mean, Mike, you know us well. We're a nonpartisan group. But we are being attacked at the same time. Yes, we are. There is a lot of focus on the organized worker, the blue collar workers. Amy and I were just talking about with the education stuff going forward. But listen, we're under attack. These executive orders of slashing the right to collectively bargain is front and center of where we're at as a worker in the United States. And we're an educated workforce, and to slash our opportunity to collectively bargain with, which I mentioned earlier, contractors in the building trades, or even on a national level. We have some 37,000 public employees in Missouri alone, and we're slashing Veterans Affairs. Those are doctors and nurses and technicians and such. We're in a tough place to bargain and work for. Better conditions, safer conditions, and continuing education for our men and women on the line.
Pat, president of the St. Louis Labor Council, Pat Kellett. Pat, what do you do on Labor Day? Will you be tipping a cold one and cooking up a pork steak?
Absolutely. We just celebrated with our workers this past Sunday. We had a nice parade and festival. It was fantastic. Well attended, a lot of volunteers. So we're giving our members the Monday off, but I'll actually be out campaigning and working on behalf of this next redistricting thing. That's something we're going to be working on in the labor movement and trying to talk to our legislators and change their minds where they're headed with that.
So. He is Pat Kellett, president of the St. Louis Labor Council, kind enough to join us here on KMOX. Happy Labor Day, Pat, and thanks for joining us.
Happy Labor Day to you, and thank you.
Thank you.
Amy, Labor Day is my favorite holiday of the year. It was Christmas at the Kelly House, and it still is to this day. Growing up, my father taught us the importance of helping those who can't help themselves and standing together to argue and negotiate for your own good. Labor Day is my favorite day of the year because I don't care if you're an electrician, if you're an accountant, a doctor, a carpenter, or even a domestic person working inside your own house or raising your own kids. This is your holiday, man. This is the day where all that work gets recognized.
Well, I know, I like you said, it's a weekend to celebrate. And one of our most fun weeks on the show was definitely saluting the trades.
Heck yeah.
Because, I mean, just whether it was like plumbers, electricians, we had like truckers, you know, I mean, just like
drive truck.
Yep. I mean, it was really, really cool. And I think with COVID, you really learn who the essential workers are. Right. You know what I mean? Like your English literature degree, the world can survive without you for a while, but it can't survive without plumbers and electricians and construction workers.
And it's also great because growing up, I was a part of that generation. You probably were too, where people were constantly talking mm-hmm. to you about college. And college is important, right, for some people. I had a lot of my friends who got involved in the trades who still to this day are making an incredible living mm-hmm. with pensions, raising families of, and sending their kids off. It's awesome to actually see people like welcoming the idea of, hey, maybe my kid might want to learn about, driving a earth mover or swinging a hammer. And it's noble work.
Oh, my
gosh.
And
it's now getting the attention that it deserves.
I think we swung a little too far to the four-year degree in the humanities or the arts, which are great. I mean, I say this as a writer, but I think opening up the opportunity, like you said, to build with your hands, to create, to work in the trades and have job security.
Right.
I mean, we're always going to need plumbers. I mean, someone even told me, if you want a good living, become a plumber. If you want to struggle for the rest of your life, you can try writing. But I mean, it really is true. And I think you need to let kids know. Not everyone has to go to a four-year degree and get a history degree.
Well, it's even bigger than that. And I would tell you grandparents out there, you parents who are out there, research this stuff. Go to the St. Louis Labor Council webpage. Learn about these apprenticeship programs that exist out there for these unions. You get paid to go to school. To become an electrician, it is 5 years of schooling. So you're in classes, and then you're working on the job. So you're getting to learn your skill as you're doing it, and you get paid to do it. It is a great life, and these folks make great money. I hope that you'll encourage young people to look at it because there are some significant opportunities here in the St. Louis area.
Absolutely. So happy Labor Day to everyone, especially all of the hard-working men and women across the bi-state area. He is Michael Kelly. I'm Amy Mark-Scores. I have a question about a business that's popping up everywhere. I'm kind of getting sick of it.
Yeah.
I've seen them everywhere. I'm going to ask you about it next on the Chris and Amy Show. All right. I did have one quick follow-up after we chatted with Pat Kellett, president of the St. Louis Labor Council. He mentioned Donald Trump's order to stop collective bargaining agreements among more agencies. Like he wants to kind of cut down on collective bargaining agreements. So there's that side, which doesn't feel very labor-friendly. But then we also know that Senator Josh Hawley, the Republican of Republican senators, walked the picket line with UAW workers out in Wentzville.
Well, and the head of the Teamsters spoke at Donald Trump's convention. So, organized labor. First of all, what President Trump is doing when he is canceling or stopping collective bargaining inside of agencies, that's where the government has direct control. He has nothing over the process of what happens at Anheuser-Busch or Schnucks or any other place or here at KMOX that a union. He does not have that authority. That authority is in our law. But so that's what he's trying to do. And that's some of the federal government-based unions. And federal government employees are not necessarily fans of Donald Trump because of DOGE. He's cutting jobs, etc. Unions are true democracies. They're there to advocate for their workers. Does that answer that?
Yeah, it does. Okay. It does. It's
complicated.
It's complicated. And like you said, sometimes rhetoric doesn't match action.
Well, and the thing about that, well, the president's rhetoric never seems to add up. But the thing about organized labor, and they often get demonized, I'm sure, some Twitter or tweets or whatever, and people may be texting that. But they kind of set the tone for the whole country. Mm-hmm. As their wage rates go up, they bring the rest of the non-union wage rates up with them. And so I just think they play an important role in our society. And isn't that a surprise to you that Michael Kelly would think that? You have an issue with a business that's popping up everywhere.
Listen, guys, every time a Steak and Shake shutters its doors, every time a fast food restaurant or a little block store in a strip mall closes down, it is inevitably replaced with a dispensary.
Really?
Don't you think they're everywhere?
There are dispensaries everywhere.
And I get it.
But like, I thought they were limited by the amount of there can be by the state.
Well, then the number is high.
I really feel like
there was a little strip mall veterinarian that closed its doors. It's a dispensary.
Yeah.
There was a salon that closed its doors. There's a dispensary, a Steak and Shake. This is just in Ellisville. So many dispensaries.
One of my favorite bars in St. Louis used to be a place called Tom's Bar and Grill right there in the Central West End. It's at Euclid and Forest Park Parkway. It got purchased. Well, I mean, this was a go-to place. You know, it was a political hangout, etc. It got purchased and is now a dispensary. And you're right. It feels like these dispensaries are everywhere. I don't necessarily have a problem with the dispensaries. I have a problem with the etiquette of the weed smoker.
Okay.
Because I'm appreciative of one that wants to partake. I see it just like alcohol to me. I think it's definitely not 100% good for you. It's a choice you make. If you drink alcohol, you know the consequences. If you're smoking marijuana, you know the consequences. But in the same sense that you're not out shotgunning beers, you know, in the middle of the mall.
Or while you're driving,
the people who are walking around smoking the marijuana and filling our entire life, every aspect. I don't care if you're going to a grocery store, if you're walking into a professional office building, if you're going into a government building, if you're checking out of a store. Mm-hmm. All I smell these days are weed. Yeah. I just smell weed. And the fact that we've legalized it, I don't know. There used to be a code around marijuana that you were, back in the 70s, I guess the stoners and the hippies, well, you know, you kind of kept it under the radar. You did it by yourself in private. If you were in a large group, you stepped away. That etiquette's gone. We just smell like a bunch of skunks everywhere.
It smells so bad. I know I sound like such a prude, but if you could invent stinkless weed, I would be so in favor of that.
Yeah.
And I'm a prude anyway. Like, I don't mind telling people how I voted. I voted yes for medical marijuana because I think opioids, I think it's criminal we're prescribing those. And so I voted yes for medical marijuana, and I did vote no for recreational marijuana.
Sure.
And I knew it would pass.
Right.
But just personally, right, do you think it's a bigger vice? Does it outweigh the benefits? And I did personally, but you know, I knew it was gonna, it's gonna pass. It's popular with everybody, but it's the smell that bothers me. And you're not supposed to smoke while you're driving because it can impede your reflexes and your awareness while you're driving.
Well, it's no different. I mean, it's a drug just like alcohol is a drug.
But it's weed is a heavy smell. And as someone, I mean, you walk in Forest Park, I run in Forest Park.
It might as well just be smoking the whole time you're in there.
Oh my gosh. I know. I actually asked a friend if you can smell it, the aroma, does that mean you're breathing it in? That's such a dumb question. Like, am I going to get high? If I'm running 20 miles in Forest Park and the whole time I smell weed, one, my stomach hurts a little because it kind of makes me nauseated.
Yeah.
But sometimes I just, I just need a break.
Yeah.
Like, I need a break from the smell.
I'm with you on the smell. You're not going to get high from walking by or walking through a cloud of weed smoke.
Now, let me tell you, at mile 18, maybe I wouldn't mind.
Yeah, getting high, exactly.
Having a little break from the pain.
it is disappointing to see. And, by the way, this is not exclusive to Missouri. I travel quite a bit. And we, as a whole country now, have accepted marijuana in a way that we're dealing in New York City. I mean, I was in New York not too long ago, and I feel like the entire city in front of the nicest hotels.
That's the number one complaint at the U.S. Open. You can smell it on the court.
Right.
And so a lot of the players who aren't from the United States maybe aren't used to playing tennis with the smell of weed permeating everything. It's been tough. But
it's not cool. It's just not cool. People, get some respect. Go hide.
Hey, I don't know the answer to this. 618, we'll throw it out there as we head to break. We have a 618 texting. In my day, marijuana smelled much different. It smelled good, not like the skunk weed today. What happened? I have heard that marijuana is way more potent now than it was in the 70s. Also, a 636 says, man, Mike, I miss Tom's Bar and Grill too. Spent many nights there.
Yeah, it was a great place.
Well, we are attempting to speak with Dale Shilley, St. Louis City Academy director and broadcaster on Y98. But, you know, maybe he's out on assignment.
Yeah.
He might
be. Well, there's been lots of changes over there at the soccer stadium recently. I'm hoping he gets to stay. It's not his problem they can't put the ball in the net.
You never, like, clean out your basement or whatever, you throw things away, you accidentally throw an extra. I hope he didn't get kicked out with Lutz.
All right, we're not talking about Dale with this, but have you ever been fired from a job?
I have not.
Me neither.
Well,
if you would have gotten fired from a job, would your parents not have strung you up? That was the exact phrase my dad would have used.
Oh,
I will
really?
String you up if you get fired.
Wow.
We have manners and blah, blah, blah. But
yeah, I don't think so. It's hard. Okay, I have always made so little money, and my dad used to call me a professional volunteer, that I think any business knew that they'd be crazy to fire me because I was basically free help. But I will say, okay, I was kind of fired. I quit one job. And then when I quit the job, I was also doing some writing for them. And it was probably my fault with the timing of the quit, because I had left the country for a few weeks and then I came back and quit.
Right.
Which is probably not great, but you know how it is. You get back from overseas and you realize, I hate this.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah. So I quit the job and I was doing some writing for them, and I think they were mad. So they sent an all staff email relieving me of my writing duties.
Nice.
Without telling me.
Huh.
And so my friend goes, oh, you're not writing anymore? And I said, well, that's news to me. So I looked at the all-staff email.
Ah.
Yeah.
So you have kind of, it just occurred to me, I'm now getting blown up on my text messages. I have been fired. I was fired on the front page of the Post-Dispatch, as a matter of fact.
What?
Wait, so
was that when they wrote that? No, so here's what happened.
Bob Holden was the governor, and he was running for reelect. And the state auditor was Claire McCaskill. And she ran against him in the primary,
okay,
for the Democratic nomination. I was the executive director of the Democratic Party. So I was there as like, hey, I'm for all Democrats. Obviously, Bob Holden's our governor. He's the lead. And sure enough, when Claire McCaskill won that primary and then later lost the election for governor, right after she won that primary, I read in the paper on the front page from Joe Manny saying Mike Kelly to be replaced as executive director.
No.
So I have been fired.
And you were fired in an all-staff email, basically.
Yeah, but it wasn't one of those situations like where they were like, you're bad at what you did, or get out, out. You know, that didn't happen to me.
No, that didn't happen either, because when they fired me with the writing, then they sent in the all-staff email about writing, they sent me another email and asked me to train the new person.
That's not right.
And I said no, and then the new person lasted a year, and they brought me back, and it was all good. We smoothed it over. Don't take things personally. Don't burn bridges, and you'll be just fine. Speaking of being fine.
Okay.
I am relieved to let you know that Dale Shilley...
He has been located?
Has been located.
Is he in a bunker?
He's not in a bunker. He's not hanging out with Lutz. I mean, no offense, that sounded terrible. We weren't sure in all the chaos, Dale, where you were. The St. Louis City SC Academic Director and Broadcaster. How are you, Dale?
I am good. I was on the training field, so sorry about that. I had a, if I finished the shooting exercise early, I would have been thrown off the field by the players. So
exactly. So do you go out there and do the training yourself, Dale, or do you just have to examine them to see if they're doing it right?
Well, no. Today, or now in the morning, I work with the City 2 team. So we're out with the 2 team today, and I think the team's on a 14-game unbeaten streak. So we've got a game in Houston on Sunday night with the 2 team. The first team plays Houston up here on Saturday night.
Excellent. Wow. Excellent. Well, we mentioned let's get into, I guess, Lutz at the beginning of the segment. Obviously, no longer with the team. I guess not a total surprise whenever a franchise is struggling or a team's struggling. Somebody's got to go. They make some changes. Were you surprised with the timing at all, with it being after that window where transfers and trades are being made?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two ways to look at it. Could it have been done before the window when you're identifying players to come in? Could it have been done after the window when you're trying to make decisions on the players that are here and what their fortunes are for next year? So, you know, the timing doesn't surprise me. I think those are if there is a good time, those are the two times that I think are probably the most advantageous. I mean, I think it's just a matter of ownership and leadership in the club, just looking at what they're wanting to achieve over the next 3 to 5 years and then making those moves that, as you guys know, were made, you know, regularly in the sports world. It's what happens. It's the way that it works.
Yeah, no, it really does. Someone, when Craig Berube was fired from the St. Louis Blues, you know, someone goes, well, you can't fire the team, so you got to fire somebody. I mean, it's just the way it goes. And of course, people know that with business, but I think one person in particular is probably on the minds of fans. And that is Roman Berkey, because it was Pfannenstiel who brought Berkey to City, and Pfannenstiel was a goalkeeper himself, and Berkey's contract is up at the end of this season. So what do you think about Roman Berkey's future?
Well, I mean, I think at the end of the day, Roman has developed relationships inside the organization as well. He is a pro, and he's a pro's pro. He understands the business part of this whole thing and the relationship side and what organizations have to go through in order to get to where they're trying to get to. At the end of the day, I think Roman wants to win games and wants to compete for trophies. And I think his eye will be towards how is the club going to shape itself up to help win games and be in the playoffs and be a regular contender.
Dale, I want to switch it up on you because a year from now, we'll be just finished up with the World Cup here in the United States. Hey, are there any St. Louis kids going to wind up being on the national team potentially that we may be able to see play for the Americans?
Yeah, I mean, the two guys that are that have the closest shot, I would say, would be Tim Ream and Josh Sargent. Tim getting up there a little bit in years, but he has been competing and has been playing with the national team. Josh has been in and out of pools and discussed and looked at, and it's really a matter of what his form is like when they go to select that team. But I would think both of them will have legitimate opportunities when they, you know, start bringing guys in and starting to really take a hard look at the roster when they start doing camps.
So if one was planning ahead right now and you wanted to go see a World Cup game, of course, none of them are going to be in St. Louis. There'll be some in Kansas City, Dallas, Miami, all the big cities. What are the probabilities that you can find tickets still?
You know what? I don't know, but I better get on it because you raised a good question. I think you could still find tickets. Certainly there's games that that aren't headliner teams that you could find tickets for. I remember, now this is in 1994, I was living in New Orleans at the time, and my wife and I made a trip over to Orlando to catch Holland and Morocco, which was a great game to see. And then we were able to find tickets for the Holland versus Ireland game, which I think was a quarterfinal, or not a quarterfinal, but around a 16. So those are the tickets are out there, especially in some of the stadiums that they're in. They're, you know, you got 55,000 people and that seating capacity in some of these stadiums. So I'm sure you'd have to look soon, but I'm sure they're out there.
Yeah, Dale, I was 10 years old when the World Cup was in Chicago, and we got to go, and we went to a game at the old Soldier Field. And it's, you know, when you're 10, you're old enough to remember it, but I wasn't old enough to realize, like, I would probably never be able to go to a World Cup game again, you know, just how rare it was. And I can tell you what stood out to me, even more than the game itself, and that was all of the fans, especially from, like, Latin America, like Central America, South America, and the flags and the face painting. And I don't know if I would call it a costume, or I mean, I guess they were costumes, just like so beautiful. I think people spent thousands of dollars on their get-ups and seeing them walk around the streets of Chicago. And I remember thinking, this is so cool, and we don't have fandom like this. Like, this is insane.
Yeah. The songs, the chants, the nationalism, the pride. It's unique. I remember in the, I think it was a quarterfinal game that my wife and I went to in Dallas, was Holland versus Germany. I was a Holland fan.
I was going to say, why have you seen Holland all the time?
Yeah, exactly.
Orange.
But we were in our orange, and we sat amongst the Brazilian fans. They're all in their yellow.
I would have been, too. I'd have been with the Brazilians.
Well,
Don't worry about it, Dale.
I thought they were going to kick us out.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, yeah, especially when Holland scored, and Bill and I were jumping up and down, not a wise move. I was a rookie at World Cups, that's for sure.
Can we find you then? Will you be at Amsterdam Tavern, like when when the Netherlands play?
I may. I don't know. I won't find a seat because there'll be others there for
sure. I've never seen so much orange in my life as when we went to, I don't know what game it was, or a final at Amsterdam Tavern. They had tents outside.
Oh, yeah.
People were outside because there were just hundreds
soccer
of people in bright
orange. Soccer
people
are special. I mean, this is not unique to Amsterdam. You go to these soccer bars all over the country, they'll stand in pouring rain to watch games go 0-0. They're quite fans.
Oh my gosh, and the songs that they sing in England, like a lot of them are personal and like go back to World War II. It's insane.
And I think the more passionate about your team you are, the more consumption of beverages you must do.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of the cities will have, you know, not just watch parties, but they'll have sections of the city shut off with big screens. And, you know, I know in Kansas City, they have the district where people will watch the games on the big screen. Other cities will have the same. That's a pretty normal practice now around the world for the World Cup.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. And, well, looking forward to the game on Saturday as City SC hosts the Houston Dynamo at 7:30 p.m. Dale, thank you, as always, for joining us.
Thank you.
That is Dale Shilley, St. Louis City SC Academy Director. You can hear him on Y98. Fresh off the pitch, he was, I guess, doing some shooting drills. That's Michael Kelly. I'm Amy Markscores. You want to keep listening the rest of the show, because we have Doobie Brothers tickets to give away. Two sets of Doobie Brothers tickets, so you have two chances to win. So keep listening. It's the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX.
If you go to a Doobie Brothers concert, you cannot complain about the smell of weed.
You can't, unless, like me, you thought that Doobie was their last name.
It's not.
It's not.
There's a guy from the Doobie Brothers right here in St. Louis,
Michael
right?
McDonald.
A couple of years ago, maybe a year ago, went to New York with my mom, sitting outside of Radio City Music Hall at a restaurant across the street.
Yep.
Look up and it says, tonight, the Doobie Brothers. I walked across the street. They said, you got tickets? They said, yeah. Bought four tickets and we went and watched the Doobie Brothers right after dinner.
That's fun. What, Michael McDonald, Doobie Brothers?
Michael McDonald, Doobie Brothers.
I do love his
voice. It was
so
great there. Radio City Music Hall.
That's
center of the world.
Really funny.
Yeah, and it was a cheap ticket. It was like $50.
That's really fun.
In New York City, $50?
I've never been to Radio.
You can't take the subway for that.
No, you can't. Yeah, I've never I've been to Radio City Music Hall.
What? Not even to see the Rockettes at Christmas time?
No.
Amy, you've never been to New York in
I've been to New York.
But I mean, have you been in the wintertime, Christmas?
I've been... Okay, they were putting, the scaffolding was still around the Rockefeller tree. Cool. It was November.
That's enough.
And that was really cool. And I've done that, and then I've also been in the spring. But no, I haven't gone to New York like after the scaffolding was taken down.
Yeah.
But I do love New York.
Well, I love New York too. I'm one of those people though, if I'm there, and I'm going to also go walk into Times Square at nighttime because I always think it's so cool that that literally is the center of the world and it's the brightest place on the planet.
It's overstimulation.
Yeah.
We've got voicemails from the Odyssey app.
Uh-oh. This one's from Kathleen.
I drove east on Gravois Road from Lindbergh down to the Bevo. And even with my windows rolled up and eventually my air conditioning turned off, the stink weed coming into my car made me not only nauseous, but I worried I was high.
You weren't.
Okay. Well, Kathleen, I appreciate that. And I will say, I had a similar experience on Olive. On Olive Boulevard, right at 270 heading west. I was not high. I didn't get high, but I did have a stomach ache and I followed this car and it was pretty trafficy. So I'm stuck behind this car, slow moving traffic. You're stopped at the never ending string of traffic lights. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to die.
I'm getting baked.
If I don't get around this person. And so I finally, I don't know if I made a bad move or an aggressive move to get around it.
Uh-huh.
And like, you could see the windows were shut, but in my mind, like a Bugs Bunny cartoon, I could see smoke coming out of the cracks of the car. But it was so irritating.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I guess I've smelled it with cars in front of you, people blowing it out the window, and then it comes in your air conditioning. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Got another voice message from Scott about the labor unions.
Let's not also forget about the educators who are members of the largest union in the United States of America, largest union in the state of Missouri, NEA. These people are working every day to educate our students, and they need to be recognized as well.
Well, I listen, Labor Day's for all of us. And when it comes to organized labor, teachers are one of the most vital parts of it. So I wasn't trying to slight them. I was lumping them all together. That's what happens. Like generally when we use the word, sometimes people use the word trades. Mm-hmm. They may not understand that that's just a specific sect inside of organized labor. I think we were kind of talking about everybody. Who appreciates more what teachers do than you and I, Amy?
I know.
You loved it and I hated it.
I do. I love school. I did. But I know it's a little bit different though because I was homeschooled. That's what I said this morning, Michael. You would
were
have
made
loved
to be homeschooled.
Homeschooling with us. Can you imagine waking up on a cold like November day and you wake up, you walk downstairs to the smell of cinnamon rolls.
Right.
And there's a fire going in the fireplace.
Where'd you live in? Norman Rockwell's house?
Little house on the prairie.
I mean, what's going on? You know what's going on at 7 in the morning? My house? Like, are you ready? Oh my God, get to the car. Michael, for gosh sakes, comb your hair. You didn't have that?
Nope.
Did you have to get dressed to go to school?
Well, I mean, yes, of course.
Come down in your PJs?
Yeah. We and this was like a question people would always ask us. Do you have to make your bed? Do you have to get dressed? And I'm like, I would always, you know. What? No. What do you mean get dressed? Yes, we got dressed. We made our beds. We were very responsible. I started school early because I liked to be done early. So I was in second grade, waking myself up, starting math on my own at 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
That was just how I ruled.
Yeah,
our family rule was
you had nosing your mom.
Listen, you
she's going to love you no matter what, you read or not.
You don't play favorites. Listen, it was three girls and a baby brother. We were all fighting against the baby brother to get some attention. But no, I kid. My mom was amazing, and our family rule was start school by 8.
Is that
it
right?
It was up to you. I mean, you were responsible, so you had to start by 8, but you could start earlier.
Oh, you could start earlier?
That's why
you know what
had
happened?
6.
At 8 o'clock, you'd hear me jumping down the stairs.
Falling down the stairs.
To get there just in time.
Joining us next, Kurt Ringkamp. He's the general manager of the Gateway Grizzlies. The Frontier League playoffs are coming up, as is the greatest night in baseball. It involves toilet paper and a baseball field. It's on the Chris and Amy show on KMOX.